Blog Talk Radio.
Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Rocket Nation, welcome to another installment of the Rocket Sports Breakdown. Rocket is here with you, as always. It's a pleasure to be here with you on this very special night. First off, I want to take this opportunity and wish everybody a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, whatever you're celebrating all across the globe. Many blessings to each and every one of you. It's been a wild time, and it's been certainly crazy these past few weeks. I want to send a special happy holidays to the families of the young children who were violently and brutally murdered in the state of Connecticut at the elementary school just about a couple weeks ago. So I want to say happy holidays to those families. My prayers and blessings continue to be with each and every single one of you. I'm pretty sure it's a difficult time. I can only imagine. But nonetheless, Merry Christmas to all of you, and Merry Christmas to the rest of you out there. I decided to have this show tonight at 10 o'clock p.m. just for this special occasion. This is a rare opportunity. It's not every day that people get to do things like this for the holidays because, let's face it, a lot of people out there shopping, they're doing the usual, and they don't get a chance to be entertained well because they're so busy. So I wanted to take upon myself the pleasure of doing this special show on a night like this. Normally I would do my show on Tuesdays now, but I decided to have the show tonight and allow you guys to just sit back, the ones who are at home, the ones who get to listen in. Enjoy yourselves. It's a special night. Be safe out there. The snow has come down up here in Michigan, and it is wild. I'm talking about wild with capital bold letters. It is that ridiculous right now, and the snow is still piling up as we speak. We're talking probably 2 to 4 inches. You never know. But anyway, be safe to all of you out there, and remember, take it slow, take it easy, you know, to everyone who's doing their last Christmas shopping. As usual, I like to start off my broadcast by saying some happy birthday wishes to a few notable athletes who have played in their respective sports past and present. And as you know, it is a special thing I like to do out of respect. You know, for a lot of these guys who have been noted as individuals who, you know, may have paved the way for upcoming individuals who get a chance to play that particular sport today. First of all, I would like to start off with the birthdays to happy 37th birthday to baseball pitcher Kevin Millwood, who has played with a handful of teams throughout his career. Most notably, he was best known for his time with the Atlanta Braves from 1997 through 2002. He played in that great pitching rotation with Greg Maddux and John Smoltz and Tom Glavine. And yes, I say it, John Rocker. He had some interesting stats. He was an All-Star in 1999. He was the American League ERA leader, in 2005 with the Cleveland Indians. And he also pitched a no-hitter on April 27, 2003, when he was with the Philadelphia Phillies. So I want to say happy 37th birthday to Kevin Millwood, who a lot of people don't really know how good of a pitcher the guy has been, but he was and has been fantastic to watch. I've had the pleasure of watching him. The Atlanta Braves, a lot of people don't know, the Atlanta Braves are my second favorite baseball team behind the Tigers, obviously. But growing up, I was a major, major Braves fan. Still am today, but I was really, really a big fan throughout the 1990s when it had so many of those big-name players. And the team has grown on strong today, and I expect them to get back to the top pretty soon, maybe within the next few years. Happy 39th birthday to another baseball player in the major leagues, Ichiro Suzuki, who has been best known for his time with the Seattle Mariners. This past season, he came over to the New York Yankees as part of a deal with the two teams. He had a pretty disappointing showing in the playoffs. He struggled, like many of his teammates, struggled big time, especially in the matchup, in the championship conference matchup with the Tigers. He struggled, unfortunately, but he still has been a big name, and he is always such a guy that's dedicated to his craft. He has had some big-time accomplishments, and he set a lot of milestones. He's a 10-time All-Star, 10-time Gold Glove winner, a 3-time Silver Slugger Award winner in 01, 07, and 09, 2-time American League batting champion, 01 and 04, an AL MVP in 2001, and also that same year he was the Rookie of the Year, and he was the AL Stolen Base Leader. And in 2005, he was the Commissioner's Historic Achievement Award winner. 2007, he was the All-Star Game MVP, and he has set a record for single-season hits with 200 62. So technically 2001 was his best year ever as a pro, but he has still remained one of the big names in the game and one of the elite players at his position, just one of the best all-around players, period. The guy has been phenomenal to watch, and I just got to say I'm happy that I got a chance to grow up watching him because he is a fantastic player, folks. The guy is good. He is that good, and it's a pleasure to watch guys who are great at their positions and who can just put up tremendous numbers and be so good at what they do. You cannot take that away from him. Yeah, he had a rough showing against the Tigers, basically in the playoffs in general, but it's okay. A lot of players from Yankees struggled. It happens. They're coming of age a little bit, but you cannot take anything away from what this man has accomplished. I would also like to wish a happy, I believe, let's see, how old is this young? How old is this man? His name is Jay Billis. A lot of you know him now mainly for his time on ESPN as a college basketball analyst, also on CBS Sports. He was born on Christmas Eve 1963. So that being said, I would like to wish a happy 49th birthday to this man. He was a top 50 recruit at Rolling Hills High School back in Rolling Hills, California, where he averaged 23.5 points per game and 13.5 rebounds per game in 1982. This guy has gone up against the likes of Michael Jordan in college and James Worthy and Hakeem Olajuwon and Clyde Drexler. He's played against these guys. He's been in the same time. He was drafted in 1986 in the fifth round by the Dallas Mavericks. Mainly, he saw a lot of his time overseas. He played in Italy. He played in Spain, averaged over 20 points and 10 rebounds per game in his career. Played on the USA basketball team, on the U.S. National Select Team in 1985. Now he is best known for his time on ESPN as an analyst for college football. You see him sitting up there with the likes of Digger Phelps and Dick Vitale, Hubert Davis, Reese Davis. I always like what the guy brings to the table. He has just such great extensive knowledge for what he has to say. He brings a lot to the table. He's very informative, and he just has so many great things to say, and I got a tremendous amount of respect for him. I think he's fantastic. I think he's wonderful. Just such a great guy, just such a great guy who's also dedicated to his craft, and I enjoy watching him on the network. So I want to say happy birthday to that man and many more as well. And again, you know, I just have so much respect for him. I look up to him as a great analyst, and, you know, I'm learning a lot from him. I'm learning a lot from him, and I think he is one of the best analysts right now. I just love watching the guy just speak. You know, he just has so many great things to say. Happy 46th birthday to former NFL wide receiver Michael Haynes, who has played for the Atlanta Falcons and the New Orleans Saints from 1988 to 1997. He had two different stints in Atlanta, played there from 88 to 93, and then from the Saints from 94 to 96, and went back to the Falcons in 1997, and he also retired after that. He was a pretty decent receiver. His career stats, 428 receptions, 6,588 career yards, and 47 career touchdowns. And in 1991, he led the NFL in yards per reception with 22.4. So he was, for a brief moment, he was one of the elites at his position. His career didn't last very long, but playing that wide receiver position and playing most skill position, positions, he just kind of disappeared, you know. Plus, he didn't play on some great teams. I mean, he really didn't. He had some rough moments. He played on some bad Saints teams, played on some bad Falcons teams. But in the early 90s, the Atlanta Falcons were a fun team to watch. But he also disappeared, and unfortunately, he kind of withered away a little bit. He didn't exactly, make a big name for himself, but he had talent. He had talent. He brought a lot to the table. Unfortunately, his career disappeared, and but he's still here. So I want to say happy birthday to him and to everyone out there. God bless him, his family, as well as everybody else. And to all the athletes who are celebrating birthdays today, happy birthday to all of you. And happy birthday to everybody who has a birthday today, period. Now, tonight is kind of a interesting show. I want to have the opportunity to showcase some of the best moments in the history of sports on Christmas, and I want to look forward to tomorrow's NBA matchups, and I want to reflect on week 16 in the NFL, and boy, was it a dramatic weekend. We saw a record shattered. We saw some teams clinch playoff berths. We saw some other teams be eliminated from the playoff race, and we also saw just great football, just great football. Games that came down to the wire, and some teams who really made some statements. And some teams you didn't expect to win this past week. They won. They took care of business. So we'll get to more of that coming up in the broadcast. So we got that. Again, just reflecting back on Christmas, you know, just Christmas and sports, mainly in the NBA and the NFL, some of my favorite Christmas moments. We're going to take some time to talk about that as well. And we're going to be taking calls all night, 347-327-9586. That is the number you want to use to call in, 347-327-9586. Remember, it's Christmas, so the Rocket Sports Breakdown, we're going to bring it to you. We're going to take a quick break, and this is something rare that I'm doing tonight, so I'm going to be doing some interesting things on this broadcast that you may not be ready for. So, Rocket Nation, strap on your seatbelt, buckle up, get ready for a power trip. This is the Rocket Sports Breakdown. We will be right back. Welcome back to the Rocket Sports Breakdown. Rocket is here and having a great time on this Christmas Eve evening. It has been a blast so far, and it was just a great day to just get out and do what needs to be done. But, again, hope everyone is safe, safe travels, especially to everyone who's driving in snow right now. It is wild. But we have proven time after time again that most of us are never to be defeated. We will continue to rise above expectations and do the best that we can. And we're just going to keep it going. We're going to keep it going, and that's what we do here on the Rocket Sports Breakdown. And one thing that Rocket himself has learned time after time again, we will rise. And to me, that's just that's the picture perfect to do what we do. Now, getting into the sports talk, I'll go back to last night. You know, update the NBA. We had some we had a few games that played last night. Just gonna update these scores real quick. The Brooklyn Nets defeated the Philadelphia Sixers at home, 95-92. The New York Knicks rebounded after playing tough basketball as of lately to defeat the Minnesota Timberwolves at home, 94-91. Carmelo Anthony continues to do his thing. The guy is just phenomenal. He's got my vote for MVP. I know Kevin Durant is playing great right now. I know Kobe Bryant is playing great. Chris Paul continues to do his thing with the Clippers, getting them off to a great start. But Carmelo has proven to be the anchor of the ship for the Knicks right now without Amari Stoudemire and, you know, just playing great basketball. They got off to such a great start. I'm loving what they're doing. He had 33 points and 7 rebounds and 2 assists in last night's game, and he continued to do his thing. The Utah Jazz went to Orlando and beat the Magic 97-93. Paul Millsap had 18 points, 7 rebounds, and 1 assist for Utah. They're a team that continues to kind of be under the radar a little bit. You know, they don't – I guess you could say they don't get the proper respect because, you know, you never know what you're going to get with this team. One week they look good, and next week they really don't. So that's a team that – they might be able to sneak into the postseason, kind of like what they did a year ago, but expectations may be a little bit higher for them. But it's tough when you're playing in the Western Conference. You got about 6 to 7 good, legitimate ball clubs that are all capable of going to the NBA Finals. Speaking of a couple of those teams in the Western Conference, San Antonio Spurs smashed the Dallas Mavericks at home, 129-91. It was the first game back for Dirk Nowitzki. But he did not lead the Dallas Mavericks in scoring. That belonged to Vince Carter, who had just 13 points, 5 rebounds, and 1 assist. The Mavericks took a beatdown, a complete beatdown. Dirk came off the bench, played 20 minutes, had just 8 points on 3 of 4 shooting, 1 for 1 from 3-point range, had 6 rebounds, a steal, shot 1 of 2 from free throw range. He's going to get his work back. I had a feeling that he was going to be back at some point this season, probably by around this time, really. I had him coming back no later than the All-Star break because I know what kind of injury that his injury suffered. You know, it takes a while. It really takes a while to really get yourself back up to full speed. But we'll see what he does for the Mavericks this year. I don't think that they're going to make much noise in the playoffs, but I do think that they have enough talent to maybe surprise somebody, but that's a tall order when you're talking about possibly going up against the Clippers in the first round or maybe San Antonio again or possibly the team that swept you last year, the OKC Thunder. So that is a tall, tall order. But this team has proven that they can win and they play well when their backs are against the wall, but I don't know. I think that the Dallas Mavericks run is starting to come to a close a little bit. They're not that elite team anymore that we are accustomed to seeing them be. They're not that competitive ball club that you don't really see much from them anymore. And it's unfortunate, but it happens. At some point, sometimes you got to tear the whole wall down and just start over. And one thing I noticed from them, they're playing tough basketball. They're not a pushover team, but they're not the type of team that's going to dominate on a consistent basis like OKC, like the Clippers, the Spurs can do in the Western Conference. You have to dominate every single night if you're going to play in that conference. It's as simple as that. You can't just be an Eastern Conference team where, you know, you may be playing average basketball and you can get a guaranteed bottom five seed, you know, from seeds 3 to 8 because there's not that many dominant teams in the Eastern Conference. However, you still got to play your tough ball, you know, on a night in and night out basis. But like they say, in the NBA, usually after the All-Star break is when teams really start playing their best ball. I can't wait for the All-Star break to get here. However, I think some teams right now really need to showcase something. Showcase something, because it's going to come down to how well you play and how well your teammates play around you. Now, as for going back to this game for San Antonio, Danny Green scored 25 points. He went 9 for 10 shooting, 7 of 8 from three-point range, had 4 rebounds, had a steal and a block shot. He played lights out. Duncan added 15 points. Tony Parker added 18. Steven Jackson, he added 14 coming off the bench. The Spurs are a team to me. Now, they're 21-8, okay? They're 21-8. They got one of the top records in the league. But yet, a lot of teams feel like maybe they can't, you know, keep up with the likes of OKC or the Clippers because they don't have enough talent. Sometimes it's not just about talent that wins games. You got to have the leadership. You got to have the desire, the determination, the faith, confidence, knowing that you can go out there every night, play your absolute best, do the best that you can, and showcase to the world what you can do. And that's all that's important. It's not about having talent. I mean, almost every team in the league has talent, but it's learning how to utilize that and turning that into a team effort to win ball games. And to me, I think that is the key, especially if you're going to play in a Western Conference, because there's so many tough teams out there right now. We got about maybe 6 or 7 legitimate playoff contenders right now, and maybe the final team or the final two teams, you know, those bottom two seeds, 7 and 8, will have to push it. I mean, legitimately push it just to get in, and that is going to be tough. So we will see what happens, I guess, after the All-Star break. That's when teams really start playing their best ball, so bring on the noise. The Los Angeles Clippers went to Phoenix and just railroaded them, 103-77. 13 straight games the Clippers have won, 13 straight. Blake Griffin scored 23 points for the Clippers. Chris Paul had 17 points and 13 assists. Jamal Crawford coming off the bench doing his thing. He scored 22 last night. And this is actually a big win for the Clippers. This is the first time they beat Phoenix in Phoenix since April 17, 2007. The Clippers' overall win streak is the NBA season best right now, 13 games. 13 games. They are for real. And tomorrow they get the pleasure of playing on Christmas Day as they host the Denver Nuggets in what should be an offensive juggernaut. I am telling you right now, that is going to be a monster game. There's a lot of games to look forward to, but I'll get to that in a moment. We got one more game that came out last night. Portland losing in Sacramento 108-96. LaMarcus Aldridge scored 22 points, 11 rebounds, and 1 assist for Portland, but it wasn't enough. Marcus Thornton led the Sacramento Kings with 22 points, 4 rebounds, and 4 assists. And this win is kind of a murky win for the Sacramento Kings. And I say that because this is just it's just been kind of crazy what this team has been going through. First of all, if you haven't heard, DeMarcus Cousins was supposed to be suspended indefinitely by the team for unprofessional behavior and contract detrimental to the team, according to the website. Apparently today they have reinstated him after just a 1-game suspension. And now it seems that things are going to be okay. Now, this is what happened according to Yahoo Sports. On Monday during team practice, Cousins and Kings coach Keith Smart exchanged words in the locker room during halftime of the Kings lost to the Clippers on Friday. Now, Cousins was benched for the entire second half and was told to stay in the team's locker room. Now, Cousins has already made a bad name for himself. He's been suspended two other times by the NBA this season because of his behavior. And he wasn't with the team who played Portland last night, but he is leading the team in scoring with 16.6 points per game, and he's averaging 9.5 rebounds per game. He's their best player. No disrespect to Tyreek Evans, no disrespect to Thornton, and no disrespect to none of the other players, but DeMarcus Cousins is their best player. He's their best athlete, and he's the guy that's going to get the team over the hump eventually. I think it's kind of amazing how he has got off to this tough of a start in his career as far as reputation. When it comes to the NBA, you have to have a good positive name for yourself. You can't keep getting suspended like this. You can't keep getting technical fouls and things like this. You have to keep a positive image and do the best that you can. The problem that I have with this is if you tell a guy you're going to suspend him indefinitely, shouldn't that carry on a little bit more than just one game? I mean, it's kind of murky a little bit. It's unfortunate, but still, that's just kind of odd how they suspend this guy after one game. And when you usually hear someone get suspended indefinitely, that usually means that's going to be more than one game, or in the NFL's case, more than 1 week, or you know, maybe a month, or you know, maybe even longer than that. It's not like it was a suspension of defensive coordinator, formerly of the Saints, Greg Williams, who's also a former defensive coordinator for the Washington Redskins, was also a former head coach of the Buffalo Bills, and was supposed to be the defensive coordinator of the Rams this season before all of the issues came back with the suspensions amongst the whole bounty scandal with the Saints organization. And speaking of the Saints, I'm going to get to them momentarily. But, again, you don't expect a guy to be suspended for just one game when he's suspended indefinitely. That's just kind of odd. But anyway, those are the games that came on last night. There are no games on Christmas Eve, but we do have five games tomorrow, and all five of them should be good ones. First of all, we got the Boston Celtics and the Brooklyn Nets. That's going to come on at 12 o'clock noon. Both teams have gotten off to very disappointing starts. They played each other twice this season, and Brooklyn has won both matchups. The first game was back on the first game was 102-97, and the second game was 95-83 at the Fleet Center. This team is kind of a rivalry. One of the games that the two teams played against each other, there was a fight that broke out, a fight between Rajon Rondo and Chris Humphries. Now, what happened was in that game back on November 28th at the Fleet Center, Chris Humphries fouled Kevin Garnett in the second quarter. Looked like it was just a regular foul, but Rajon Rondo, losing his temper, retaliated with a two-handed shove that sent Humphries into the courtside seats, and then that propelled Gerald Wallace to shove Kevin Garnett, and then it just got a little violent after that. And that was the game where Doc Rivers called his team soft, pretty much put his team on blast. And the Celtics right now have gotten off to a disappointing start. A lot of people thought this was going to be the second-best team in the Eastern Conference behind Miami. They're 13-13 right now. They've lost five straight games on the road, and they've lost two games already to the Brooklyn Nets. And I know that this team was going to go through some changes because of the veterans. You know, some of the guys are getting a little old right now, and they're bringing in some younger players. But 13-13, that's not the type of record you want to have. But if you're in the Eastern Conference, that's okay because, let's face it, there's only going to be about maybe two or three legitimate championship contenders in the Eastern Conference this year, the Heat, the Knicks. That third spot, I guess you could say, is up for grabs. You can make a case for the Celtics because of their past championship experience. Maybe they'll turn it up after the All-Star break. You could certainly make a case for Brooklyn because of the pieces that they brought in, the expectations being high on them. I would say Chicago, but with Derrick Rose's injury, I'm not so sure about them. They have been playing some tough basketball as of lately. I will give them that, but can they sustain that for an extended period of time? That remains to be seen. But there will be some bad blood a little bit between these two teams. You would think playing on Christmas might help, but I'm going to get to that later on in broadcast between two division rivals who played a game on Christmas Eve after some drama that went down just less than a month ago. One of those teams I still cheer for today. We'll get to that later on in the broadcast. But there's going to be a tough matchup for both of these teams. The Nets are just 14-12. They've kind of been a disappointment so far. People expected them to play better than this because of what they've done in the offseason. The expectations being high on them, new stadium, new team name, newer fans, and a newer market. Just all those things that that contribute to a team having success and trying to compete to win a championship, which looks like it's going to be a tall order for them. The next game that will be coming on will be the Knicks and the Lakers. Now, the Knicks have gone off to the best start they've had in over a decade. Seriously, I'm talking about going back to the days of Patrick Ewing, Charles Oakley, John Starks, Charlie Ward, Larry Johnson, a.k.a. Grandmama, Allen Houston, Latrell Sprewell, Marcus Camby when he was much younger. And it's funny because he's on the team now, and he's helped out when he could. He's been a contributor for a team getting off to a great start. They're 20-7, and they're playing a Lakers team that's got to be the most disappointing team in the NBA this year. Now, Steve Nash came back just a few nights ago and helped give the team a spark, so they've gotten off to a better start as of right now, but they're going to have their work cut out for them. And keep in mind, these two teams played each other just a couple weeks ago, back on December 13th at the Madison Square Garden. The Knicks won that game 116-107. In that game, Steve Nash was out with an injury. Pau Gasol was out with an injury. It's going to be a different Lakers team now with those two guys being back and kind of gelling a little bit. I watched him play a little bit as of late, and I like what I saw as far as the chemistry on the court with Nash and Gasol and Kobe and Dwight Howard. Can they do that in this game? This is going to be a tough game. If you're the Knicks, this is a game that you want to put your stamp on. You want to go and send a message quick, hard, whatever it takes to get the job done, this is what you want to do. You can't afford to slip up and let up underneath these circumstances because I'm telling you right now, the Lakers are starting to get their mojo a little bit. And if you're the Knicks, and the Knicks, they've kind of been struggling a little bit as of lately. I will be honest with you. But they need to win this game. This is a must-win from both teams. I think this is going to be the game of the day, and this is going to be the game I'm looking forward to watching the most. To see Carmelo and Kobe go at it, these are two of my three favorite players right now in the league, alongside with Kevin Durant. This is going to be a great matchup. And anytime you hear Kobe say that Carmelo is the toughest player to guard in the league, that strong praise coming from who I still think is the best player in the game. No disrespect to Kevin Durant, but I'm just telling it like it is. Kobe is playing. He's playing with fire. Now, if he can get the rest of the team to play that way, we will see what happens. It's not often that the Knicks get to play on Christmas either, so this is a game that they need to win, and they need to win and do the best that they can. The next game that's on the schedule will be the OKC Thunder against the Miami Heat. The Thunder right now have the best record in the NBA at 21-5. They're 7-3 on the road. This is a matchup, well, a rematch of last year's NBA Finals or last season's NBA Finals, whatever you want to call it. Both teams feel like they both got a lot to prove. The Thunder were expectations on them getting back to the Finals and winning it this time, the Heat getting back there and redefending with all the big talk that LeBron did, you know, winning all these championships or whatever. Well, it's here and it starts here now, so hopefully you'll do that. And we will see what happens. But, again, this is going to be a good matchup. It's going to be a great matchup. It's a matchup that you certainly want to look forward to watching the most. Both of these two teams have gotten off to good starts, especially OKC. They are playing with fire right now, and they should be. And they should be. A lot of people felt like losing James Harden was going to hurt them a little bit. Well, we'll find that out in the long run. We'll find out when the postseason gets here. I will say Kevin Martin has certainly contributed the best way he can. He has certainly played the best basketball he can play for this team. He has contributed in a lot of ways right now, and I have to say that he's playing his role. He's playing his role as he should be, and you have to take into consideration that they weren't asking this guy to come in and score 25 to 30 points a game. I mean, if he can get them 15 per game, they'll be all right. It'll be up to Durant and Westbrook to carry the load and to do their part in order for this team to continue to have the tremendous amount of success that they've had up to this particular point. I do think that we will see OKC play their best basketball once the postseason gets here. That's what I believe is going to happen. Now, keep in mind, I'm a diehard Lakers fan. They are my team in the Western Conference, but I think OKC right now, they really have a lot to prove. And the playoffs are going to be interesting to watch because there's going to be some teams that are just going to be on fire with the main focus to go out there and win a championship and play their best basketball. That's what it's going to come down to. That's what it's going to come down to, and I can't wait to see this matchup. It's going to be a great matchup, and it's going to be what we expect. It's going to be exactly what we expect. Next game we have will be the Houston Rockets and the Chicago Bulls. Nobody expected Houston to have a winning record at this stage in the season. They're 14-12 right now. That's acceptable for many of us in the NBA because they're playing in a tough, brutal Western Conference with so many dominant teams right now. If you were to tell me that the Houston Rockets would have been able to acquire Jeremy Lin, who they originally drafted a couple years ago, and be able to bring in James Harden, who they practically snatched away from OKC, I would have laughed at you. I would have laughed at you completely. But they were able to do that, and they have proven to be quite an interesting tandem. Will that carry on into the playoffs? I doubt it. I really doubt it. Anytime you're going up against the likes of OKC, the Clippers, Memphis, who to me is still under the radar, Spurs, and even the Lakers, despite their struggles, you also got to put the Nuggets up there. You also got to make a case for the Golden State. Golden State has gone up to the best start that they've played, their best start since 2007, the last time they made the postseason. You can't count out the Mavericks. I mean, they still got great talent on their team. So it's going to be crazy in the Western Conference as far as getting to the postseason. But this particular matchup features two teams who are – you got one team that's still finding its identity and another team that sort of lost it, and that being the Chicago Bulls, who took such a major blow when they lost Derrick Rose in that playoff game and then – the off-season surgeries, and it's sad to see. It's very sad to see because even when he does come back, he's not going to be the same Derrick Rose anymore. He's going to take a really, really, really major setback, and he's going to have to rely on other aspects of his game. This is a guy who has been known to be a slasher. Attack the basket, get fouls or whatever, get layups or dunks, whatever it takes, pull up for jumpers inside the paint. This is not a guy that settles for long-range shots. Unfortunately, he's going to have to rely on that a little bit when he comes back because of the surgeries that's going to take away from his athletic ability. I was listening to NBA TV's Open Court where the guys were talking about this particular subject and how when he comes back, he's going to be physically stable a little bit and even mentally stable because this sort of thing really takes away from a guy's athletic ability and his means to be able to cut to the basket and get some easy shots. He's going to have to rely on being more of a jump shooter and really develop that aspect of his game, and that's not something he's necessarily known to do. I remember Antonio McDyess the year he played in New York in 2003 and 04, the 03-04 season. And he went up for a dunk, landed, and his knee took a major blow. And from then on, he wasn't known as the slasher Antonio McDyess that we were seeing back in his days in Denver and Phoenix. We weren't seeing that from him anymore. And what happened was he had to get a major surgery done, surgical operation done to his knee, and the Knicks pretty much gave up on him. Now, what happened was the Pistons decided to bring him in, and he proved to play some of his best career basketball. He didn't have a lot of big numbers compared to his days back with the Nuggets and Suns, but he still proved an integral part to the Pistons' regular season success and their deep playoff runs getting to the Eastern Conference Finals. And then the Finals the first year he joined the team when they were defending their championship. It was unfortunate that McDyess has not won a championship, but he remained one of the best to ever play the position. And he was dominant for an extended period of time. Very dominant and very fun to watch. But anyway, having that surgery, he had to develop on his jump shooting ability. And he developed it nicely. I remember just watching him play and just shooting that jump shot with confidence, just shooting with extreme confidence and just having such a good shooting percentage. The guy would be about 5 to 10 feet away from the basket, pull up for a jumper, the ball goes in most of the time. And it was just incredible to see him develop that as a great aspect of his game. And he continued to get better as a jump shooter. And to me, that's something that Derrick Rose is going to have to do, period. He's going to have to do that. Now, don't get me wrong. The Bulls, they got some good players on the team. They got Joakim Noah. They got Nate Robinson. They got Rip Hamilton, Luol Deng, who's been with the team for many years now. They still got Carlos Boozer. But without Derrick Rose, who is your best player and who is your best athlete, it hurts. It hurts. It hurts. And I'm just telling you like it is. But they have enough to have some success in the regular season because, again, they're playing in the East. And they already have a winning record right now. And they're playing in a division where it's theirs to lose. It's theirs to lose. Basically, with Milwaukee being an average team, Indiana taking a step back with the loss right now of Danny Granger, who should be back with the team probably within another month or so, maybe even sooner than that. With two struggling franchises right now in the Cavs and Pistons, it's the Bulls' division. It's the Bulls' division. So hats off to them. They're 15-11. They're 8-6 at home, and they're right where a lot of people feel like they should be because of the absence of Derrick Rose. So that being said, they still have enough to make some noise in the regular season. We'll find out what this team is all about when the playoffs get here. The final game, going back to a team that has a privilege of playing on Christmas, the other team out in Los Angeles, the Clippers, they are 21-6. We are going to see, for the first time ever, the Staples Center host two basketball games on Christmas. My apologies, Christmas. The Lakers will host the first game. The Clippers will host the next game. This game will be on at 10:30. They're going to play a savvy Denver Nuggets basketball team who's so very entertaining on offense. They are a very, very athletic team. Very athletic team. This will be the first of three meetings. The Lakers have had their way with the Nuggets over the years, going back to the playoff matchup back in 2006 where the Clippers won that game in the best of five. Both teams have gone through major changes and upgrades over the years, but they are, the Nuggets are just playing some good basketball right now. They won four of their last five games, and they got, to me, a good front court, a very fun front court. JaVale McGee is a very, very, very entertaining athletic player. I just love watching him play. I got a chance to watch him against the Pistons about a couple weeks ago, and I was just amazed at how well this kid is playing. This dude got skills. I'm talking some major, major skills. With the 14 trade involving the Lakers getting Dwight Howard, the Nuggets were able to land Andre Iguodala from Philadelphia, as well as some other pieces. This team right now are playing good basketball. The Nuggets dominated the Charlotte Bobcats 110-88 on Saturday night, where Costa, Kalfas, Kenneth Faried, Iguodala, and McGee combined for 60 points in that game, and they all shot a combined 27-37 from the floor. The Nuggets lead the NBA in points in the paint per game with 55.6. They have put up, you know, two of the highest single-game totals in the category this season in the last two games of 74 and 78. This team knows how to attack the basket. They rely on a lot of alley-oops, a lot of dunks inside the paint, and they got such a good three-point shooting team. They got some good guys that can shoot the three-point range. They've averaged 109.3 points per game in their last four, although they just shot 26.6% from three-point range. They had one game the other night against Golden State. They were 0 for 22. First team in NBA history to shoot more than 20 three-pointers in a game and not make any of them. But they do live and die by the three-pointer. So combine that along with the ability to get inside the paint, this is a very dangerous team. If you don't believe me, ask the Lakers last year. They took the Lakers to seven games. Ty Lawson is playing some of the best ball of his career. I love watching him play. This is going to be a fun and interesting game. And this could be a possible playoff preview. So if you're a fan of either of these two teams, you want to watch this game. This will be the game to close out Christmas. This will be the first of three meetings. The first one will be on New Year's Day at 9 p.m. So these two teams are already setting some milestones, playing on Christmas Eve and then New Year's Day. And then the next game will be Thursday, March the 7th. Both of those next two games will be in Denver. This will be the only matchup as of right now between these two teams at the Staples Center. But this will be the first of what will be three great, fantastic games. To me, this might be the highest scoring game on Christmas Day, regarding all the games that are being played. I think when I look at these games, I look at the Celtics and Nets as the most physical. The Knicks and Lakers featuring the two of the top scorers, OKC, Miami, finals rematch, Houston, Chicago, the most underlooked game, and the Nuggets and Clippers, the most entertaining matchup. To me, this will be a game where it'll be decided in the 100s for certain, most definitely. Well, we have reached the half point of our show right now. It's 11 o'clock. We're taking calls 347-327-9586. 347-327-9586. We are going to take a quick break, and we're going to keep this thing going and do the best that we can. So enjoy it. We're going to come back and talk more about some of our best moments on Christmas in the history of sports. I'm going to get into one particular game that, it was quite an interesting game to be played on Christmas Day. We got that coming up and more on the Rocket Sports Breakdown. Rocket Nation, stay tuned. Welcome back to the Rocket Sports Breakdown. Rocket is here with you here on this Christmas Eve. Merry Christmas to everyone out there. We got one more hour left in the show just about, and I want to spend as much time reflecting back on Christmas and some of the games played on Christmas Day, most notably in the NBA where it's been a traditional thing. I'm going to get to that momentarily. I want to look back on week 16 of the NFL. We had some monstrous games being played. We had, I guess you could say, some milestones being set. We had quite some fantastic finishes. And, you know, we even saw players continue to play some of their best ball, no matter what their teams are doing. But we've had some players really step up and do their thing. I'm going to go back to the Saturday matchup where my Lions lost at home to the Falcons, 31-18, unfortunately. But the bright spot in that game for the Lions was Calvin Johnson, who finished the game with 11 catches for 225 yards, passed Jerry Rice for all time in the regular season in terms of receiving yardage. He set that milestone last night, and he's got one more game left to play. He needs just over 108 yards. Get over 2,000 of the season, and I think he'll do it. I know they're playing Chicago next week, but I still think he'll do it regardless of the competition. It's a great record to have. Good for them. It's been disappointing for the team this year, but with the win for the Falcons, they have wrapped up the number one seed in the NFC, so the road to the Super Bowl will go through the Georgia Dome. Although that might not mean anything to certain teams. Most notably, if you're a team like the Green Bay Packers who beat the Falcons the last time a playoff game was held at the Georgia Dome 2 seasons ago, beating them soundly by a score of 48-21 en route to winning their Super Bowl. If you're the Falcons, you have not forgotten that game. You certainly didn't forget what happened to the Giants in the wild card round last year, 24-2, although you got your revenge on them. But still, Matt Ryan has yet to win a playoff game as a quarterback. The Falcons head coach, he's yet to win a playoff game as a head coach. So this would be a good time to do it if you want to turn it up and turn it up now. But nonetheless, the Falcons have the number one seed in the NFC. And again, congrats to Megatron for getting the all-time receiving record in the regular season. The Vikings went on to pull off what I thought was the upset of the week, winning at Houston, beating the Texans 23-6. A.J. Peterson only had 26 carries for 85 yards, so he didn't play his best ball of the season. J.J. Watt, who was also chasing a record for most sacks in the season, finished with 1 sack, so now he needs 2 sacks, 2 more sacks to break the record, 1.5 to tie the record. They're playing the Colts in the season finale, so it's a possibility he may get that. I'm counting on it. It's going to be a tough game, but I'm counting on it. I think he'll do it. Adrian Peterson is going up against the Packers this upcoming Sunday. I don't know if he's going to get that rush record. He needs 190 yards to eclipse 2,000. He needs over 200 to break Eric Dickerson's record. It's going to be a tall order going up against the Packers defense, so we will see if that happens or not. The Rams went to Tampa Bay and beat the Buccaneers 28-13. In that game, Sam Bradford had 196 passing yards, going 13-27, threw a couple TDs and a pick. Mike Williams led Tampa Bay with 7 catches, 432 yards, and a touchdown. That's one of those games that nobody really cares about or whatever. It's no big deal, blah, blah, blah. Buffalo losing in Miami by a score of 24-10. C.J. Spiller had 22 carries, 130 yards for Buffalo. Reggie Bush had 19 carries for 65 yards and a touchdown. And he also caught a couple touchdowns. He scored all 3 of Miami's touchdowns. He ran for 1, caught 2, and he's been a rare bright spot for the Dolphins this year. He's played some well football. He's played some good football this year. This is a team that they also drafted a rookie quarterback, but he's not getting the recognition because his team has been struggling. But this Miami Dolphins team will eventually get it together. I'm counting on it. I'm definitely counting on it. The Raiders lost at Carolina to the Panthers 17-6. Cam Newton went 18-29 for 170 yards and a touchdown and a pick. Darren McFadden from Oakland ran 17 times for just 33 yards. That's horrible. And the Panthers don't even have that good of a defense. That's just horrible. But that's been the story of the Raiders all season long. Just horrible. Chargers went on to beat the Jets in New York 27-17 after being down 14-7 at the end of the first quarter. Phillip Rivers, he only completed just 50% of his passes. He only threw 565 yards, but he did throw two touchdowns, no picks. Sean Green led the Jets with just 14 carries with just 38 yards, but he did score both of their touchdowns. And speaking of the Jets, it looks like that they are about to give up on Sanchez and Tebow. Looks like Tebow's not going to be back with the team next year. Neither will Sanchez. Looks like they're going to try and trade Sanchez. Tebow's pretty much going to get the boot. And they're moving in a completely different direction right now, a direction that none of us really expected. But, you know, it is what it is. What more can you say? It's unfortunate. Now to the games that do matter. The Saints went on to Cowboys Stadium to beat the Cowboys 34-31 overtime. It was a fantastic finish. One of the Saints receivers caught the ball, fumbled, but their all-pro tight end, Jimmy Graham, recovered the fumble at the two-yard line, and on the ensuing play, the Saints just went on ahead and kicked the game-winning field goal after Dallas could do nothing on their possession. Tony Romo and Dez Bryant have been a lethal combo. Romo completed 26 of 43 passes for 416 yards, four touchdowns, no interceptions, but there is no reason for the Cowboys to lose this game. I know they went up against a high-powered Saints offense, one of the best in the league, but there's no excuse for this. Now, Drew Brees completed 37 of 53 passes for 446 yards, and he threw three touchdowns, no picks. Romo was sacked a couple of times. He didn't fumble. He didn't make any mistakes. DeMarco Murray, he fumbled once for the Cowboys. He only ran just for 11 times for 40 yards against one of the worst defenses in the league. Just kind of odd a little bit. But Dez Bryant was a rare bright spot in the receiving game for the Cowboys. Caught 9 passes for 224 yards and two touchdowns. He's certainly been emerging as one of the league's elite receivers, and he and Romo have been on a roll. Now, with the loss, that being said, the loss is going to hurt the Cowboys because they got to go to the Redskins and beat Washington next week for first place in the NFC East. There's going to be some scenarios in the NFC East with those three teams, with the Cowboys, Redskins, and Giants. I'll get to that in a moment. The Redskins went on to beat the Eagles 27-20. Robert Griffin III, in his first start since his injury he suffered 2 weeks ago, completed 16-24 passes for 198 yards, two touchdowns and a pick. Jeremy Maclin was a rare bright spot for Philadelphia. 8 catches, 116 yards, and a touchdown. The Redskins, they're now in sole possession of first place right now, but they need to win. If they beat the Cowboys next week, they are in the playoffs. They will win the NFC East, and nobody would have saw that coming, including me. Absolutely unbelievable. Speaking of another rookie quarterback, the Colts went on to beat the Chiefs 20-13. Andrew Luck, he didn't play his best ball. He only completed 17 of 35 passes, less than 50%, due for just 205 yards. He did throw a touchdown. He ain't throwing the interceptions. That's been the theme of his season. He's thrown 18 interceptions this year. He has thrown 22 touchdowns. He's the leading candidate to be the Rookie of the Year for the offensive players as far as Offensive Rookie of the Year is concerned. He's thrown for more yards compared to RG3 and Russell Wilson. He's thrown for more touchdowns. He has thrown the most picks, and he has the lowest quarterback rating. But look at what he did with the Colts. And the Colts clinched the playoff berth, so they will be in the playoffs. And looks like they're going to be the fifth seed, depending on what Cincinnati does. But the Colts, they are now the fifth seed in the AFC. Pretty much all the playoff spots in the AFC have been clinched. Now it's just going to come down to order from seeds 1 through 3. Who's going to be the top 2 seeds? Who's going to get first round buys? Who's going to be number 1? Who will the Super Bowl really have to go through? That will be interesting to see. Speaking of Cincinnati, they went to Pittsburgh. They won 13-10. I didn't see this coming. A.J. Green caught 10 passes for 116 yards. Ben Roethlisberger just hasn't been the same since he's come back. They've lost all 3 of their games since he came back and took over as a starting quarterback again. Now, what's sad is he threw a late interception at the end of the game, which was picked off. And then the next play, they completed a long pass to A.J. Green. Carter got out of bounds, and with just a few seconds left, the Bengals kicked the game-winning field goal. And after that, that was pretty much the end of the game. Now the Bengals have clinched that playoff spot. The Steelers are out. They're 7-8, and looks like Ty Haley will not be back in Pittsburgh next season as the offensive coordinator. He only signed a one-year contract with the team. I wouldn't bring him back. I really wouldn't bring him back. And it's funny because their former offensive coordinator is now the guy that's been taken over as the head coach as the Colts, while the main head coach has been out due to his illness. But Chuck Pagano will be back. Congratulations to him. God bless that man and his family. He will be back. He will coach the final regular season game. He will coach the team in the playoffs, regardless of who they play or whatever. It's going to be fun to watch, and I'm looking forward to seeing how well Andrew Luck plays in the postseason, how he's going to do, period. Patriots went on to beat the Jacksonville Jaguars 23-16. At the time, Brady got off to a slow start in the game. He did throw two interceptions, but he completed 24 of 41 passes, 267 yards, and two touchdowns. Justin Blackmon was a rare bright spot for Jacksonville, catching seven passes of 79 yards and a touchdown. With the win, the Patriots, they're working their way up trying to get the number one seed. It'll be interesting to see how Week 17 falls down for many of these teams. The Packers just destroyed the Titans at home 55-7. Technically, it was 55-0, but the Titans scored on their final possession of the ball game. This game was just, it was all Green Bay. I knew they were going to win. I didn't think they was going to win this big. And it's funny because this is the third season, this is the third game that the Titans have given up 40 or more points to NFC North competition. They gave up 50-plus to both Chicago and Green Bay, and they gave up 41 to Detroit, although they won that game. But they've been quite a disappointing team. They were 9-7 last year, and a lot of people thought that they were going to be better off that. A lot of people thought that Jake Locker was going to have a breakout year, and he's been one of the disappointing players at his position. Unfortunate for him, but, you know, they went up against a motivated and hot Packers team right now. With that win, the Packers are now trying to work their way into getting the second seed in the NFC, depending on how San Francisco does, and I'll get to San Francisco in just a moment. The Broncos destroyed the Browns at home 34-12. Peyton Manning is just lights out. Completed 30 of 43 passes, 339 yards, three touchdowns and a pick. He is just on fire. He's got my vote for MVP. Regardless of what happens with Adrian Peterson, I'm going to tell you something real quickly. Adrian Peterson is a young running back. He's only 28 years old, okay? I knew he was going to bounce back from that knee injury because he's young. He's an explosive player, and explosive players are always capable of bouncing back from these injuries. Peyton Manning had four different neck surgeries in a year's span. Most people thought he was never going to play again. I knew Adrian Peterson was going to play again. I knew it. It was no question he was going to play again. When exactly he was going to play again was the question, but he came back a lot sooner than many of us expected. Hey, man, look at what he's done. He's resurrected his career with a new team. And people say that Adrian Peterson should be the MVP. Look, Adrian Peterson gets my vote for, I would say, comeback player of the year, but Peyton Manning is the regular season MVP. As far as I'm concerned, it's his award to lose, and I dare anybody to challenge me and tell me I'm wrong on that. Anyway, the Bears went to Arizona and beat the Cardinals 28-13. Matt Forte, 12 carries for 88 yards and a touchdown in that game. The Chicago defense dominated Arizona. The Bears are trying to clinch one of the other seeds in the playoffs right now. It's going to come down to Week 17. They're going to need some help to get in, but it's going to come down to Week 17 that will determine their possible playoff fate. And the other game, Giants just got beat up by Baltimore 33-14. There was just no way around it. This game was over when it started. Technically, in a lot of ways, Joe Flacco, 25 of 36, 309 yards and two touchdowns. Eli Manning completed just 50% of his passes, and he only threw for 150 yards. Against the Ravens team that just looked completely lost after last week's embarrassing defeat to Denver. Well, the Ravens are now, looks like they're going to clinch possibly the fourth seed, maybe the third seed, depending on how New England does next week. But the Giants, on the other hand, they are going to need a ton of help get into the postseason. A ton of help. A ton. And in the Sunday night game, the Seattle Seahawks just absolutely obliterated the 49ers, 42-13. Colin Kaepernick, he completed 19 of 36 passes, 244 yards, a touchdown interception for Seattle, for San Francisco. Russell Wilson played, to me, his best game of the year, by far his best performance. 15-21, 171 yards, four touchdowns and a pick. Just absolutely lights out. The Seattle defense just dominated. They got a block on a field goal attempt on a special teams return on a touchdown by cornerback Richard Sherman. Marshawn Lynch dominated in the running game. They are just – they might be the one team that nobody's going to want to play in the playoffs in the NFC. I'm sorry to say, but they are going to just – it is just going to be ridiculously insane. Now, here's what we're looking at as far as the standings go in the AFC. Now, basically, judging by the looks of everything, it looks like we got all the playoff seeds are set. Now, here's where things are going to get a little crazy. The Broncos are 12-3. The Texans are also 12-3. Now, the Texans had the best conference record at 10-1. And they also own a victory over Denver at Mile High Stadium earlier this year. So those two are the top two seeds right now. New England is number three. Baltimore is number four. Indianapolis being at 10-5, they have clinched the fifth seed right now. And Cincy has clinched the sixth seed as of right now. So basically, the Texans need to win next week against Indy. I hope that Denver loses. Vice versa for Denver. They need to win next week. Hope that the Texans lose. New England, they need to win and hope that both the Texans and the Broncos lose in order for them to claim the number one seed. Baltimore, they're only playing for either the third seed or the fourth seed. They will host the game in the first round, possibly against their division rival Cincinnati, or possibly against Indianapolis, the Colts, a team who used to play in Baltimore. A lot of people in Baltimore still resent the Colts for leaving when they did back in the 80s from Baltimore. And the NFC, only four teams have clinched playoff spots. Atlanta, they got the number one seed. They're 13-2. They got the best record in the NFL right now. Next week, they play a divisional game against Tampa Bay, a game they should win. It really doesn't matter at this point. They might rest their starters. They got the number one seed locked up. They don't really have to take any chances by hurting some of their star key players. Green Bay right now, they have clinched the NFC North already. Right now, they have the number two seed because of San Francisco losing to Seattle. However, if Green Bay loses to Minnesota next week, and if San Francisco beats Arizona, which I'm counting on Arizona to be San Francisco to beat Arizona, and San Francisco will have the number two seed wrapped up. However, if San Francisco loses to Arizona next week and if Seattle beats St. Louis, then Seattle will hurdle San Francisco for the number one for division lead in the NFC West and the number two seed in the NFC, and that will and that'll kind of lead everybody to going back to the Monday night game between the Packers and Seahawks. And trust me, I'm going to be talking about this in Week 17. With the play at the end of the game, the final play at the end of the game that happened, that shouldn't have happened, but it happened, it's whatever. People are going to be talking about this quite possibly. Now, the Redskins right now are in first place in the East. Basically, if they win, they're in. They're in. Now, all they have to do is beat the Cowboys, regardless of what the Giants do. They have to beat the Cowboys, and they have to get in. Now, as far as the Giants are concerned, they're going to have to win and possibly hope that Washington loses and possibly hope that Dallas loses. Washington, the Giants have to win the NFC East. They got to win and hope that the Cowboys beat the Redskins. Now, if the Cowboys win and if the Giants lose, and the Cowboys will win the NFC East. That's pretty much the way that works. Giants are going to need the most help. Now, Minnesota, despite pulling off the big win, they have not clinched a playoff berth yet. If they beat Green Bay next week, they will do so. Chicago, on the other hand, Chicago has to beat Detroit to hope that Minnesota lose to Green Bay in order for them to get the last wild card spot. So that's pretty much what that boils down to. So right now, the Vikings have a better division record. The Vikings have a better division record than the Bears. Bears need to beat Detroit, and they need Minnesota to lose to Green Bay. So that'll be the way that works. If both teams win, then Minnesota will get that last playoff spot. So that's pretty much the way that works. It's that the scenarios are just so wild, you can't even wrap your finger around it. Because anything can change, too, by the way. That's pretty much another thing. Now, with the loss, San Francisco took a bad loss with some of their key players being hurt. Vernon Davis left the game with an injury. Mario Manningham, he is now lost for the season. That took a big blow to San Francisco's receiving core. He tore his anterior cruciate ligament and his posterior crucial ligament in his left knee. It happened when he caught a screen pass and was tackled low by Seattle linebacker Leroy Hill. He fumbled the ball as a result of the play. He was limping. He was using crutches. He had to be escorted off the field. He's proven to be a contributor. He hasn't put up a lot of big numbers this year, but he has helped in certain ways as far as their receiving core and provided leadership. Now, if San Francisco beats Arizona and if Green Bay loses to Minnesota, the 49ers will win the NFC West title, and they will get the number two seed. If they lose to Arizona and if Seattle wins, then Seattle will take the division. You see where I'm going with this? I know it sounds kind of murky, but trust me, that's the way that it's shaping out to be right now. Basically, AFC is wrapped up. It's just about seeds as far as positions and things like that. Who's going to be number one, number two, number three, number four, number five, number six? We all know the six teams that are in, but it's going to come down to the number of seeds as to who's going to earn which seed, who's going to get a first-round bye, who's going to have complete home field advantage in the AFC. That's going to be talked about quite a lot. And it's going to be wild as far as how the seeds and the positions are going to look in the NFC Conference. And one thing I can say, we all know that Week 17 always determines everything, but it's going to be a dogfight. It's going to be a dogfight. You got three teams who are competing for one division title. You got a few teams competing for wild card spots. Got a few teams competing for the number two seed. So it's going to be tough as far as what's going to have to happen and what they need to do in order to win their respective games and handle their respective business as far as what they have to accomplish. Because for the first time, we could see three rookie quarterbacks play and participate in the postseason. To me, that'll be phenomenal. That will be phenomenal, and I'm just looking forward to seeing how all of this is going to look, and I can't wait to see. Now, according to NFL.com, okay, basically the playoff scenarios are going to be wild. Now, let's go back to the NFC real quick. Basically, the AFC, well, let me go to the AFC real quick. This is what has to happen, all right, for the Houston Texans. The Texans can clinch a first-round bye with a win or tie, a New England loss, and a Denver loss. So they have to win and hope that the Patriots and Broncos lose their games. They also will clinch home field advantage if they win. If they have a tie or a Denver loss and tie, or if New England and Denver both lose. I know it sounds kind of crazy, but basically what needs to happen is the Texans need to win and the Patriots and Broncos need to both lose their games in order for them to clinch home field advantage. Denver will clinch a first round bye. Well, they'll clinch home field advantage if they win plus a Houston loss or tie, or a tie plus a Houston loss. They'll clinch a first round bye if they win or tie and New England loses. New England, and keep in mind, the Texans are going to have the toughest game because they got to go to Indianapolis and play the Colts. That's going to be tough. Broncos, they get to host the Chiefs at home. They should and will win that game. New England, they get to host Miami. They should and win that game. New England will clinch a first-round bye if they win plus a Denver loss and a Houston loss. They'll clinch home field advantage if they win plus both Denver and Houston losing. I know that's kind of murky a little bit. And like I said, the Ravens are basically playing for the third or fourth seed. Indianapolis right now, they have the fifth seed. If they win, they'll remain the fifth seed in the AFC, regardless of what Cincinnati does. If Cincinnati wins, then they'll be number six anyway. Green Bay will be playing at Minnesota this week. Green Bay can clinch a first-round bye if they win. If they have a tie plus a San Francisco loss or tie, and or a San Francisco loss plus a Seattle loss or tie. San Francisco will be hosting Arizona. San Francisco will clinch the NFC West simply just win, and Seattle loses. If San Francisco wins, they'll clinch the NFC West, period. The 49ers can clinch a first-round bye if they win, plus a Green Bay loss or a tie. But basically, they got two things to clinch here. The NFC West and the second seed in the NFC playoffs. So they need to win. And if or when they win, because they're playing Arizona, they should win that game. They'll have the number two seed and the NFC West wrapped up. Seattle can clinch the NFC West if they win and San Francisco loses. But they can clinch a first-round bye with the win plus a San Francisco and Green Bay loss. Now, here's where things are going to get a little interesting. Washington is in first place in the NFC, East. They can win. They'll clinch the NFC East with a win or tie. They can clinch a playoff berth with a Chicago loss and a Minnesota loss. So they need Chicago and Minnesota to lose their games for them to win. And even if they lose, they need Chicago and Minnesota to lose in order for them to get in. Dallas will clinch the NFC East division if they win, period. Beat the Redskins, you're in the playoffs. The Giants can clinch a playoff berth, and this is going to be the craziest thing. Like I said earlier, they need a ton of help to get in. The Giants can clinch a playoff berth if they win, plus the Cowboys lose or tie, plus the Bears lose, plus the Vikings lose. So basically, they need the Cowboys, Vikings, and Bears to lose all of their games for them to get in. If any of those teams win, Giants can kiss the playoffs and their Super Bowl defending title goodbye. And that's pretty much the way it's going to look, unfortunately, for them. Minnesota can clinch a playoff berth with a win, a tie, plus a Chicago loss or tie, a Dallas loss or tie, plus Giants loss or tie, plus a Chicago loss. Chicago, who will be playing at Detroit this weekend, will clinch a playoff berth with a win, plus a Minnesota loss, or a tie, plus a Minnesota loss. So basically, they need to win, and they need Minnesota to get to lose. If Minnesota loses, if both teams lose, then Minnesota gets in and Chicago's out, plain and simple. Giants are going to need the most help out of everybody to get in, period. Period. And if Dallas wins, they're in, period. Washington will clinch the NFC East if they're in, period. The Giants can still clinch a playoff berth, but they're going to need Chicago and Minnesota to lose both of their games. Week 17 cannot get here fast enough, folks, as far as I'm concerned. I'm sorry. I'm serious. Week 17 can't get here fast enough. Period. Period. Okay? And I cannot wait until these games are played. And the best part about it is all of the games played in Week 17 are division games. And I cannot wait. That is just going to be phenomenal. Just phenomenal. to see. I kind of like what the NFL did with that, having all the divisional games played in Week 17, because division titles need to be crowned, and not every division has been clinched just yet. So let's get to the games. Tampa Bay at Atlanta, Baltimore at Cincinnati, Jets at Buffalo, Jacksonville at Tennessee, Houston at Indianapolis, Cleveland at Pittsburgh, Chicago at Detroit, Philadelphia at the Giants, Carolina at New Orleans. Those are all the 1 o'clock games. The late games will be Green Bay at Minnesota, St. Louis at Seattle, Arizona at San Francisco, Miami at New England, Oakland at San Diego, Kansas City at Denver, and the Sunday night game will be the Cowboys at the Redskins. Originally, that game was supposed to be the Giants versus the Eagles on the night game, but because that game is one-sided compared to the Cowboys and Redskins game, this is going to be, to me, the Cowboys versus the Redskins is the game of the week. It's the game of the week, period, because, for starters, it's one of a few games that features two teams who have winning records and are competing for postseasons. This is the game that's going to determine a lot of the marbles. So I'm just going to make my quick predictions. Now, I know Atlanta's hosting Tampa Bay. I'm going to tip the Falcons to win anyway. I think they'll win. It could go either way. They might sit their starters or whatever. Pittsburgh, I take Pittsburgh to beat Cleveland, get a little bit of revenge for Cleveland beating them earlier this year. I'm going to take Cincinnati at home over Baltimore. I think the Bengals are coming on as of lately. Take away that loss to Dallas. I think they're playing a little bit better. I'm taking Chicago to beat Detroit, unfortunately. I would never pick Chicago under any circumstances, but in this case, they got a lot to play for, and I expect them to go out and play their best and try and win that game. I'm going to take Buffalo to beat the Jets, although nobody cares about that game. I'm going to take the Giants to beat the Eagles because they have to. I'm going to take the Saints to beat the Panthers. Nobody really cares about that game either. Titans at home over Jacksonville Jaguars, same thing. I'm going to take the Colts to beat the Texans. I do think that J.J. Watt is going to set the season record for most sacks in the season. I think he's going to do it. But I think the Colts are going to get the game. They're going to come away with the win. I'm going to take the Packers to beat the Vikings. Yes, I'm going to take the Packers to beat the Vikings because Green Bay is hot right now. Yes, Minnesota's been playing some good football as of late, but the Packers are on a roll right now. That's another team nobody's going to want to face in the playoffs. And if Minnesota wins, we could possibly see a Vikings-Packers first-round matchup, so keep that in mind. I'm going to take the 49ers at home over Arizona. They'll win. I'm going to take Seattle at home over St. Louis. The Seattle Seahawks will get in the postseason. They're already in, but they're going to get a good spot. Well, technically, yeah. But if they win and the San Francisco loses, then they will definitely get a good spot. I'm going to take the Patriots at home over the Dolphins. Chargers at home over the Raiders. Nobody cares about that game, unfortunately. Denver will beat Kansas City because they need to and they have to. And I'm going to take the Redskins at home over the Cowboys. The Redskins will win the NFC East, and the Cowboys will be on the outside looking in, as well as the Giants, because the Redskins, Falcons, Packers, 49ers will win their divisions. The Seahawks will get in, and I think probably the Bears might get in. Maybe the Giants, depending on what the Vikings and Bears do, but it's just crazy right now. It's just crazy. Anyway, I want to take the last few minutes to look back on some of the best games in the NBA played on Christmas Day. It's been traditional. We rarely see any NFL games played on Christmas. It's more of a Halloween and Thanksgiving tradition in the NFL for games we played on those holidays. Basically, last year, we saw the NFL games were played on Christmas Eve, and they were just phenomenal to watch. We saw a lot of great games that took place last year. In the NBA, it's become a traditional thing. The first NBA game was played 1947 on Christmas Day, a year after the NBA's inception, when the New York Knicks beat the Providence Steamrollers at Madison Square Garden by a score of 89-75. Since then, the NBA has played games every single year on Christmas Day, except 1998, when the lockout canceled half of that season making the NBA to only lead to regularly scheduled games on December 25th. That game was reduced to 50 games, and that was the only year that games were not played on Christmas since the NBA began playing Christmas in 1947. Basically, teams would usually play their geographical rivals to cut down on how they travel and a lot of time to have more time with their favorites. Not this time. Not this time, because the Knicks have to travel out there to Los Angeles from New York to play, and OKC has to travel from Oklahoma to Florida to play. And we also get to see the Chicago Bulls host the Houston Rockets. So the Rockets will have to drive from Texas, will have to fly from Texas to Illinois to play that game. The Knicks have played the most games on Christmas Day with 47. They are 22-25 on the holiday. Their most recent appearance was last year when they beat the Celtics 106-104 at Madison Square Garden in the very first game of the regular season opener. Knicks' 22 wins are the most by any team on the history of Christmas Day. There have been a lot of notable players and coaches who have played on Christmas Day. Going back to the days of Bernard King, Jack Ramsey, Earl Monroe, Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell, Julius Erving, Oscar Robertson, Bill Jackson, he's coached on those days. You got to go back to, you got to move a little forward to Michael Jordan, Patrick Ewing, Shaq, Dirk Nowitzki, Scottie Pippen, and in this generation now with LeBron, Chris Bosh, Paul Gasol, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, Dwayne Wade, Doc Rivers, who's coach, Pat Riley, who's coach, Stan Van Gundy, who's coach, Dwight Howard, Amari Stoudemire, Carmelo Anthony, and Derrick Rose. A lot of these players have, some have participated on Christmas Day as both a player and a coach. Doc Rivers participated as a player with the Knicks in 1992, and then the coach with the Celtics in 2008. Kobe Bryant has played 14 games on Christmas Day, the most of any player on the history of the day. He played his first in 1996 and most recently last year, and he will play on Christmas Day again tomorrow, hosting the New York Knicks. Bill Jackson has also participated as a player and a coach, being a part of at least 20 of the games. Coached every holiday year during the 90s except 1995 and 2004, since 1990. He retired last year, and on 2008, he won his 1,000th career game as a head coach on Christmas Day, so he set a milestone. A lot of the players will be wearing different jerseys. I expect some teams to wear different jerseys tomorrow, so that'll be interesting to see. The NBA playing on Christmas Day has just been you know, historic. And I mentioned this earlier. I think back to Christmas Day of 2004 when the Pistons and Pacers played each other. The Pistons won, but it was more significant for the rivalry because both teams played each other the playoffs before in the Eastern Conference Finals, in which the Pistons won in six games. They played each other the following year in the playoffs, in which the Pistons also prevailed in six games. And we saw Reggie Miller play his final NBA game as a player. We also remember the brawl at the Palace on November the 19th, 2004. I'll never forget that day. It was on a Friday night. I watched the game. The Pacers had their way. They won, but the game wasn't completely finished. It was about 20 seconds left in the game. The Pacers won by 15, and the artist formerly known as Ron Artest met a world peace. Shoved Ben Wallace when he was going to the basket. Wallace responded by pushing him. Then the fight ensued a little bit. Players from both teams were separating both guys. And then next thing you know, Artest, at the time, that was his name, found himself laying on the scorer's table. A beer cup came flying out of nowhere, hit him in the face, and he jumped in the stands with Steven Jackson following behind him. And it was just everything after that was just horrible, just horrific. And it was just wild. But to see those two teams, and some of the players, a few players were suspended from that game. Steven Jackson was suspended for the Christmas Day matchup. Artest was suspended for the rest of the regular season. So it was bad. Jermaine O'Neal was the only player who was able to get his suspension reduced, originally from 25 games to 15, so he was allowed to play on that Christmas Day game. That was the first of two wild Christmas days, Christmas Day games. The second was the Heat and Lakers. The first time we saw Shaq and Kobe go head-to-head, Shaq was traded to Miami that offseason. He went back to the Staples Center to play. The Heat won in a close game. Kobe Bryant scored 42 points, didn't get any layups or dunks. All of his points were by jump shots, long range and everything, free throws, whatever. And that was just a wild finish, a very, very wild finish. And I just look back on a lot of these games. I watched the other game back in 1994 the other night between the Bulls and the Knicks, and that was a fantastic finish. It has just been such a privilege to see these games played on holidays. It's just been wonderful. Very, very wonderful to see. Now, tomorrow we will not have any games broadcasted on the TNT station. However, back in 2008, TNT broadcasted a Christmas Day for the first time in a game between the Wizards and the Cavaliers and the Mavericks and the Trailblazers. It was the first time that all three networks that broadcast the NBA, ABC, ESPN, and TNT, broadcast the games on Christmas Day. And this also happened again last year when TNT broadcasted, because of the pre-lockout, which games were officially started and opened up on Christmas Day. The very first game was Celtics and Knicks, which was broadcasted on TNT. ABC broadcasted the Mavericks, raising their 2011 championship banner, in which they got whooped by Miami. And then it was just a wild game, and there were so many wild finishes and so many wild opportunities. And a lot of these players have been privileged to be able to entertain the world, playing on national television on Christmas Day. It's just great. And it's great to see a lot of these players enjoy the privilege, because not every team gets to do it. Thanksgiving is usually for the NFL. It's usually also for the NHL as well. Christmas is traditional on the NBA. It's special. When the world is watching you, they get to watch some of the best players in the world and some of the best teams in the world just play and duke it out with each other and put up great numbers. It's fun. It's a privilege. It is a privilege. I wanted to take the opportunity to reflect on that and just look back on some of the more opportunities played on Christmas Day, mainly in the NBA. The NBA has just been such a privilege to play on Christmas. We've seen some NFL games be played on Christmas Day over the years. It's been such a privilege. I've loved it. But when I think of the NFL on the holidays, I always think of the NFL on Thanksgiving. It's just so traditional for that to happen. But we're going to have some great matchups tomorrow. And I'm looking forward to every single game. I cannot wait. It's going to be fun. And I hope everyone gets a chance to enjoy themselves with their families. That will just about conclude the Rocket Sports Breakdown. I just want to say thank you all who have supported me in this broadcast these past few months that this show has aired. Next week we'll be back on, and we're going to have a special show on New Year's Eve. I'm going to broadcast during the afternoon, probably around 5 or 6 p.m. The time is yet to be determined, but be on the lookout. I will announce it publicly on my Facebook page this upcoming weekend, and you will find out no later then. I'd like to take this opportunity to wish everyone a Merry Christmas, wonderful holidays. God bless every single one of you. To everyone who's lost someone, my prayers and blessings go out to each and every one of you. I know how difficult it can be to lose someone, but I want to say real quickly, may God bless every single one of you, and may you all get a chance to spend the holidays with the ones that you have with you here, and may the ones who are no longer here be with you all in spirit. I also want to say to all the shoppers out there, some people are probably still late night shopping, Merry Christmas, drive safely, especially if you're driving in the snow. Snow is coming down hard up here in Michigan, but it's a special time. Be with your families, be with your loved ones, be with your friends. Enjoy the holidays. enjoy it. Just enjoy it. Make the best of it. It's a time to be thankful. It's a time to be with your loved ones. It's a time to be blessed. It's a time to give thanks. God bless every single one of you. And I want you all to know out there that Rocket is doing his best day in and day out. He's not perfect. He sins much like everybody else. But he learns from his faults. He's doing his best to be a better individual because of it. That being said, I just want to say again, God bless every single one of you. I wish you a safe and happy holiday. And again, be with your families. Be with your families. Enjoy your time. Just God bless every single one of you. And next week I will be back. And I want to send a special Merry Christmas to my castmates from my film Love Has Mind of Its Own, to my castmates from the film The Goblin Lady, to future actors and actresses I work with, to all my co-comrades in the stand-up comedy game, to all my comrades, all the hosts on Blog Talk Radio all across the globe, every single one of you, keep up the great work, keep doing what you do. To all of my fans, and I know I have a few, thank you. To the Rockin' Nation, keep representing. We're going to ride out into 2013 with even greater expectations. So Rockin' Nation, buckle yourself up. Get ready for a power trip. And again, take care of yourself. Stay safe. Rocket wishes you all the best. God bless you. And Rocket will see you all next week on another installment of the Rocket Sports Breakdown. Take care of yourselves.